set and heat today. And we got the corner fired up here. Did have it fired up. It was working this minute ago. There we go. That's not much. Okay, so if you remember, Antioch of Syria right here is the starting point from Paul's missionary journeys. It's his home. And last week we talked about how he traveled this area here through Galatia. He went back where he had been before, through Tarsus to Lystra and Derbe, where he picked up Timothy. And it went on or Lystra, Derbe, and Iconium. I think Timothy actually is from Lystra, but not positive. This is the other Antioch over here in Antioch of Pisidia. And he went on to Troas, where he saw the vision at night about a man from Macedonia over here. Says, come over and help us. So they sailed across the Aegean Sea, landed at Neapolis. And then last week we also talked quite a bit about the time in Philippi. Several things happened to them in Philippi. Can you name off a few? Lydia was converted.
They were thrown in jail.
They were released from jail. Converted to jail and his family. What else? Something right after we talked about when they got to Philippi, the first thing we after the converted leaders.
Slave girl.
Right. The slave girl that was possessed with the spirit of divination, and we talked about that. And so, after the incident here, after they were freed in Philippi, then remember the jailer and his bosses or officers told them, okay, you can go ahead and leave now after they had beaten him. What was Paul's response to that? I'm a Roman. You can't do that. And what else? Apologize in public to it. If you beat us in public, you apologize to it in public. And so they did, and they went back into verse 40 of chapter 16, and went back into the house of Lydia again, apparently to rest up or to prepare to leave, and so they did. And so today, we're going to try to finish up the second missionary journey, basically comprises of all of chapter 17 and down to verse 22 at the end. In chapter 18, verse 22 is the end of the second journey. Verse 23 is about the beginning of the third. So we're going to try to cover some ground today. And so we're told that they went on. All we're told here in chapter 17, they went through Amphipolis and Apollonia and on to Berea. Apparently they did not stop, but for some reason it was mentioned that they passed through those two towns, they came to Thessalonica first. And chapter 17, verse 2, Paul, where did Paul normally go from Tennessee to New City? Goes to the synagogue. And for 3 Sabbaths, it says he reasoned within the scriptures, explaining and demonstrating that the Christ had to suffer and rise again from the dead. Why is, and this is, this term, the Christ, is used several times. Why is that, you know? What does it mean? What does Christ mean?
Messiah,
the anointed one was the one I'm looking for. And I think that was, well, actually both of those are important to the Jews because they were looking for a Messiah. They knew that a king was always anointed before he became king. And Paul took the old scripture, the old law, all they had, the law of Moses, and use that, their own law, that they didn't know, that they didn't understand, and demonstrate to them that Christ would, this is the Christ I'm preaching to you. This is the Messiah. If you will read your Old Testament, if you will understand it, you'll see. Read all those prophecies and understand those, and this is who I'm preaching to you. And so it says that there was a multitude of the devout Greeks, and not a few or several, maybe many, of the leading women joined Paul and Titus. But we run into the same old problem here in verses 5 through 9. And that old, same old problem that plagued Paul his whole lifetime after conversion was what?
The
envy of the Jews. And their aggressive attitude and their aggressive actions to stop him. So, and they were cowards too. Verse 5 tells me that they're cowards. They wouldn't come to themselves and accused him. They went to the marketplace and found what we might call bums or hoodlums, yeah, skid row type people, whatever, and probably paid them, but at the very least convinced them to go around spreading lies. And they got the whole house in an uproar. And so we see there in verse 6 and 7 that Paul and Silas and probably Luke also were staying in the house of this man named Jason. So they knew that. The Jews knew that. So they go to Jason's house and couldn't find him. Sounds like they did an illegal search procedure there. And so they couldn't find him, so they drug Jason out. Where is this Paul? Where is this Silas? And so they basically made Jason put up bombs, you know, to stay out of prison and let him go at that point in time. I find it interesting that they couldn't find him. Paul and Silas wouldn't be hiding. They went to the public places. But for some reason, at least on the day that the Jews went to find him, they couldn't find him. They couldn't find him, at least in Jason's house, but I don't think it took them long. It wouldn't have taken long. Somebody say so? Okay. And we might just say verse 7 there. They accused him of saying there's another king. Well, would that part be true? No doubt it would be. They preached Jesus as the king of the Jews. But what did the Jews either not understand or not want the people to understand? Right. He wasn't going to replace Caesar. And that's what they're saying here. There's another king. This is contrary to what Caesar's law. And so they thought there was going to be this big civil uprising and this big political problem. But in fact, that was not what the apostles were saying at all. Okay, and so because things were really headed south here, the brethren, verse 10, sent Paul and Silas away by night to Berea. And was it? Oh, I just think he shut down on me today. He didn't have done that before. So they sent him by night to Berea, from Thessalonica over here to Berea, which is not very far. I'm looking for, we don't have the scale on here. Anybody know how far that is?
60 miles.
60 miles? Okay. Well, that looks like quite a bit. No, I don't mean it. Okay. But anyhow, it's a distance. It's not a day's journey.
And so they went right to the synagogue of the Jews again, and they were much better received in Berea than they were in Thessalonica. And this scripture, verse 11 here, is one I'm sure we all maybe we can't quote it, but we know most of what it's about, and that is they searched the scriptures daily to find out if the things that they heard were true or not. In other words, just because they heard something and didn't understand it or maybe didn't believe it, they didn't immediately say, oh, you're lying, or what you say, you don't know what you're talking about. They went to the old law and they read to see if the things Paul and Silas said were true or not. And then they made up their mind. And that's really the way we can receive things. Whether it's the Bible or other things, unless we know it on the face of it. So verse 12, many men believe, many Greeks believe, and women as well as men. And the Jews from Thessalonica found out about it, and so they followed them over there. It's like they've done it on the first missionary. Followed them over to Berea and started in again. So the brethren sent Paul away to go to the sea. That is verse 14. But Silas and Timothy stayed there. Okay, so it appears that Paul caught a ship and went on down to Greece. And verse 15, and specifically, you look at Athens, you see verse 15. Verse 15, it says, so those who conducted Paul brought him to Athens. Okay, he's got people traveling with him. You might call them assistants, you might call them bodyguards, you might call them whatever, but they're not called an entourage, but they were helping Paul. They're taking care of the physical things that he needed on his journey, probably arranging places to stay, food, a route of where to go, people to look out for to stay alive. And you know what? We've had the same thing happen when some of our brothers had went to the Philippines, you know, the last time or two that Tom Wood was there, and I think maybe some of the other brothers, they came very close to being arrested or captured by monkeys. So I think the same thing is going on here with some of Paul's people. And so they brought him to Athens, and then Paul told them, go back, now that I'm here at Athens, you go back up here to Thessalonica, or Berea, and get Timothy and Silas and bring them back down here to me. So this takes some time. So we've got this back and forth. And so then we have the big story about Paul in the city of Athens, Greece. Or I don't know if it was called Greece then or not. Maybe you know better than I. It's called Achaia, which is a Roman term for Greece, or maybe it's a Roman word for Greece. I don't know. But that's what it's called here, is Achaia. And the town, of course, is Athens. Okay. This account of Paul in Athens goes from verse 16 all the way through the end of the chapter. And we'll spend a little bit of time, on this. Let someone read 16 through 21 first.
Now I all waited for them in Athens. His spirit was provoked in him when he saw that the city was given on the island. Therefore, he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the Gentile worshippers, and in the marketplace daily, those who are bringing some strange things to our ears. Therefore, we want to know what these things mean. For all the Athenians and the foreigners who were there spent their time in nothing else but either to tell or to hear some new things.
Okay. So what do we know about the Greek culture in this day and age?
Very philosophical, forward.
That's not a word.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Very philosophical. And
philosophical? There you go.
Open to new ideas and new theories and wanting to explore all the possibilities.
Okay. Okay.
That's all true. Well, it says they were given over that.
They were very idolatrous. All of that is true. We do know too that the Greeks, I think it was in this period of time, that the Greek culture was considered the seat of learning, of wisdom for the whole world, wasn't it? And they were just a weird crew, I would say. But they were really very learned people, obviously. But in any case, what struck Paul is that the whole city was given over to idols. And so he went to the synagogue again with the Jews, he met with the Gentiles, it said, and in the marketplace daily. Paul was on the hunt every day for those who would listen to the gospel. It wasn't a one day a week job. That was his whole being, his whole life, and he was continuing. Okay, what do we know? Verse 18. The Epicureans and the Stoics were basically two polar opposite types of people. Anybody know what Epicureans were? What they believed? And that was that any earthly physical pleasure, if you can find it, you should indulge in it. You should totally wrap yourself up and be consumed with anything that makes you happy. Does that sound familiar? If it makes you happy, do it. The Stoics, on the other hand, were pretty much the opposite. They were much different from that. They believed much more in self-denial and self-sacrifice than voting in anything that made them
fatalistic.
Okay, yeah. But they were both referred to as philosophers. And if I think a philosopher is someone who sits around and thinks about things and is pretty much engrossed in their own world. And so, anyhow, they were trying to determine what it was that Paul had to say. And so, they brought him to the high court. In the Old King James, the Areopagus is called Mars Hill, which is the same thing. The court was the Areopagus. And I think the location was Mars Hill. And so they brought him up there. They probably, no doubt, had a coliseum or some type of a stadium where they could gather and everybody could hear. They could sit down and could hear what they had to say. So they said, verse 19, what is this you're talking about? We haven't heard about this yet. Verse 21 says, the Athenians, or those who lived there, and foreigners also, those who came there, that's all they did, was trying to find out new information.
And this is kind of a change. The Jews, they didn't want to hear what
they said.
They knew what it was, but these people actually invited them to tell them.
Yeah. They're a totally different crowd as far as their motives, their initial motives were. So Paul wanted nothing better than a chance to preach the gospel. And so, let's read. Someone please read the rest of the chapter, if you will. Begin at 21. started his discourse saying, I perceive that you are a very religious people, when in fact they were idolaters. But they were. Religious is not necessarily just the meaning of the word. It doesn't necessarily mean truth. It means that you're very diligent. What's some other words that we could use for religious?
In this case, superstitious.
Superstitious, yeah. And they were very superstitious. In fact, they were so afraid that they would leave out one of their false gods that they erected an altar to the unknown God. And I read a little bit, I didn't drop down notes on this, but hopefully I can explain it, what I read. But there's a historian from that time period that talks about this, the way that they came up with this altar to the unknown God was that these priests brought a bunch of sheep up to Mars Hill. And they wanted to determine where these gods had fallen from the sky and came down to earth. And so they just let the sheep go. I didn't say how many. They just let them go, and they just watched them until they laid down. And wherever a sheep laid down, they slaughtered it right there. They sacrificed it to a god. Okay? And so after they got done with all of them, I don't know if they ran out of gods and had a sheep left over or what the deal was, but it's a pretty convoluted story. It really doesn't make any sense. It may have been what they did, according to this story, but. And that's how they come up with the locations of these altars and this one called the unknown God. And so Paul says, the one you don't know is the real God. And he's the one I want to put in. And since he made everything, and here he turned their own, he used their own smart people, or poet, it says in verse 28. He says, some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring, talking about this unknown God. So if your own people have said you're the offspring of the unknown God, why do you worship these things that you make with your own hands? Why do you worship things made out of wood? Wow. That's ridiculous. You're superior to the things that you made. Why would you worship those? So let's back up a little bit. He says, verse 24, God made the world and everything in it, this unknown God, the true God. The one that you don't know. And so if he made the whole world, why would he dwell in something that you've made with your hands? Well, it's kind of a strange statement, isn't it? Because if they had a brain, they could think back and they could have said, well, God did dwell in the temple made with hands. There is a temple in Jerusalem. There was the tabernacle where he dwelt. And that's all true. But that's all gone. He didn't need to dwell there. He didn't have to dwell there, but he did to be close to his creation at times when they were faithful.
This is kind of the same thing we told the women as well, that you're going to worship, but it's not going to be in any heavenly place or temple.
Right? It won't be in any particular place, which point out it won't be with something that you made or with men's hands. He doesn't need these things. He's already given you all these things. Why would he need them to be your God? He's given life, breath to all things. Humans, animals, plants. He's made all life. And he's made verse 26 is curious, and I would like to hear your thoughts on it. I read a couple of different things, and I kind of have all day my own thoughts on it, but I'd like to hear what you think about verse 26. He has made God's most from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth. That's pretty simple. We all came from Adam. Eve even came from Adam. She was created, of course, by God, but from Adam's rib. so we all are related in the sense that we all came from the blood of Adam. We all dwell on the earth. But there's this last part. God, I'm certain God here, has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of the world.
First thing I think of is Tower of Babel. Tower of Babel, you know, all people are kind of commonly in one place and determined to build this great city. God got them to confuse their language. And they were sent. I mean, they went everywhere, scattered over all the face of the earth. And then once they scattered, they had a tendency to stay in those areas. I mean, they, people have traveled around, but with the language that they had, and you tend to stay with people that you understand. That's the first thing I think of.
I tend to think of never Demeter's dream that Daniel explains, the image with the golden head and the different metals and clay and metal at the feet, because it's talking about the nations of men and their boundaries and when they're going to rise and when they're going to fall. God has already designed when all those will be. And the dream of Nebuchadnezzar is a good instance where you see a lot of that. And Daniel explained it.
One brother mentioned that there was only 8 people in Noah's book.
So we have a really interesting question that we can see that God in times past was because of some of the things we can see that God had a hand in many various empires would rise and fall. So the question is, does he still do those things? When you read this, it makes it sure sound like he still does those
things. There's several verses to talk about how God raises up nations and destroys nations. We see that throughout.
An example would be when he chose to send Jesus to earth. You know, it was just at the right time.
Right.
And God didn't lead to his nations.
Right. Yeah, I kind of have a feeling that predetermined times is actually a predetermined season. That's what spring running harvest, seed running harvest, and all of that, which he has. But he was made, and then connects that right along with kind of the bounds of where you live. In other words, this is where he put us, on the earth, and then he made the earth to make it an agreeable place for us to live, before we just all the food. So there's a lot of things to think about in this verse, and we're not going to pound it all out right now because we don't have time, but it might be something that you want to think about. I do think when it says the boundaries of the dwellings, I for sure think that this means that man is meant to live on the earth and we're never going to live on the moon or Mars or any other planet. Yeah, we can go there, man. We've been to the moon. We might get to Mars someday. But we're only going to be there as long as we have something that will sustain us from the earth. In other words, take oxygen with us. Or make oxygen. Take food with you. Take water with you. That's not going to come from Mars, and it's not going to come from the moon. Okay. So, he continues that God has made all these things and has a plan or a way that that everyone can find him. Verse 27. You've got to look for him. You may have to grope around, and it may not be real easy, but God wants you to work to find him. And so then we go back to the verse where he quotes their own poet saying, you by your own self say that you're the offspring of God, so why would you worship these idols? In verse 30, God used to overlook, or the King James says, weep at these times, but now commands all men everywhere to repent. You see that also in 2 Peter 3 and verse 9.
Let me ask this question. Why did God wink before, but he won't wink?
I think the main reason was people did not have the information they needed. they were getting then, now, as we say now, I mean 2,000 years ago, they had this, they relied on the scribes and the learned men to read the law of them in the synagogue and explain to them. And even when those men fell away, they were all lost. They had no clue what to do.
I think this is kind of a characteristic of the fairness of God. Not a fair.
He didn't hold them to the standard he holds us because they didn't have that information. We're held to a much higher standard as Christians because we've got everything that we need. We got information from day one.
The main thing is we had God come to earth.
Right.
At this time, he came to earth. But before, he didn't.
We've got more freedom, but we've got a whole lot more responsibility. Okay. He has appointed a day to judge the world in righteousness by Jesus Christ. Okay, so verse 34, we've got to move on here. It appears that one, at least one member of the court was converted, this Dionysus. In verse 34, it says the Areopagite. So I take that to be a member of the court, as today we might call a judge or a lawyer or a prosecutor or some member of the court. A woman and others with them. So Paul leaves Athens and goes to Corinth in the next chapter. Okay, just a hop, skip, and jump over here to Centuria. That's the country. Corinth was a wealthy seacoast. Well, was Corinth on the seacoast or was it off just a little bit? This is showing it's on the seacoast. I was thinking maybe it was a couple, 3 miles in on the other. And this is where he met Aquila and Priscilla. They were Jews who had been expelled from Italy, which is over here, not on our map, because of Claudius Caesar, that is right, isn't it, Claudius Caesar, I think, had expelled all the Jews from Rome. And so that's why they were at Corinth. They were tent makers, of course, and so Paul goes, verse 4, Paul stays with them. They work together making tents. In verse 4, he reads in the synagogue every Sabbath. Paul stayed in Corinth a long time. We'll get to that in just a minute.
So,
they possibly they were converted on his first missionary journey. You would have thought we would have heard about that. But they almost surely wouldn't have been converted in Italy. Before they came.
That's where it says that they were from Pontus. That they were from
Pontus. You don't know. That's probably where... Probably the same name as Pontius Pilate. I don't know if he was named for Pontius or the city was named for him. But
Pontius was part of Asia Minor.
Part of Asia Minor? Oh, okay. Alright, I'm wrong then. Because here's Asia over here. But they had been living in Italy over here to the east, far to the east. And, we know that they were dispersed throughout the whole world, the known world. So, we don't really know. It doesn't say that Paul converted them, that they were baptized either. But
Pontus is a region. This handout that you gave us, Pontus is just straight above Turkey on this map here.
Okay.
Right on the Black Sea.
Okay, the Black Sea is up here, isn't it?
Yeah.
No,
that's just a little farther than the tomb of that.
Okay, up in here.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is Russia over here today, right? In this area?
On up a little higher.
Okay, well, the Black Sea is on the east of Russia.
Yeah.
East of Russia, I believe.
Right, wrong.
Okay.
All right, well, let's not get on the geography too much.
So Silas and Timothy were following Paul along, and they came from Macedonia, which was way original, verse 5. Paul apparently had not launched into his bold discourse. I don't know. But in any case, he was compelled by the Spirit, my version says, in verse 5, after Silas and Timothy got there, to preach to them that Jesus is the Christ, or the anointed one. And they opposed him, they blasphemed, and he used the old Jewish custom of shaking his clothing at them, which means, I am clean and you are condemned, and I'm done with you. And he was. He says, from now on, I will go to the Gentiles. So we're not even going to get through, I thought it was just chapters we went. And so, went into the house of justice, and it says, his next one was synagogue, and the ruler, this is kind of important, the ruler of the synagogue then was Crispus, who believed, and many of the Corinthians hearing believed and were baptized, verse 8. And the Lord spoke to Paul in the night by vision, do not be afraid, but speak, and do not keep silent, for I am with you, and no one will attack you to hurt you, for I have many people in this city. I found that to be an interesting statement. Here he was bringing the gospel.